time for the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
Yes, it does. And good to have you with us on this Wednesday edition of the show. A lot to do over the next 60 minutes. David Ardsma, our closer, join us a little later on. We'll talk some Major League Baseball with him. Get his thoughts on Yankees, Guardians, Mets, Dodgers. Also, the situation in Tampa with the Rays, who don't have a place to call home now. Because it sounds like Tropicana Field will not be an option for them after Hurricane Milton blew through Florida. So we'll get into that with him. We got some NFL to talk about as well. And we have a special guest joining us on the show today. How about, look at that guy. That is Patrick McEnroe, ESPN tennis commentator.
Let me get my baseball bat. Hold on, Jason.
he's the president of the International Tennis Hall of Fame. Look at this. He's got a bat.
Well, so, you know, there's nothing like a good piece of wood. You know what I'm saying?
The best thing would have been if you just swung that and broke something in whatever one of your 17 rooms you're in.
Louisville Slugger. It's got my name on it.
I love it. That's fantastic.
I'm trying to remember where I actually got it. I think I might have gotten it actually from Louisville Slugger in my years of traveling around the country, you know, for tennis. So
that is very cool.
It's always good to have a good solid piece of wood when we're talking baseball.
And I love it.
You know, start getting ready. My Yankees, just two games to go, Jason. It's looking very, this might even be a sweep, by the way. I don't want to get ahead of myself.
Oh, don't do it. Don't do it to us, man.
But start playing the music, baby. Start teeing up old Frank. Yankees, total team effort last night. They actually had opportunities to blow it wide open early. Didn't do it. But, you know, it worked out beautifully. Cole was okay, but good enough to sort of get him in the game. And then, of course, finally, the judge connects.
Aaron Judge.
So that is a very good sign. I think it didn't really matter that much last night. It gave him a little cushion. But I think that matters a lot moving forward for the Yankees and Judge.
I thought the signs were there for Judge, though. Even though everybody's going to point to the fact that he had struggled, you could see progressively, I think the layoff from, you know, the end of the season and having 7-8 days off, I think it affects different players differently. I just think it does. And Judge wasn't swinging the bat particularly well going into the playoffs. So I think for him, it might have been a double whammy. And I think it takes time to sort of get your swing back. And you could see progressively throughout this postseason, having better at bats, not expanding the strike zone, and giving himself opportunities until finally last night he gets one up in the zone, you know, a 96 or 97 mile per hour fastball up in the zone. He's able to get it up into the jet stream there and knock it out to center field. I got to say, though, the one thing that's driving me nuts, this Yankee base running, I mean, this is Little League stuff, and they are as bad as it gets in baseball, and they have been all year. I think Baseball Savant had them listed dead last, you know, by all these baseball base running metrics and stuff. Case in point in last night, John Sterling on the mic, Yankees radio on WFAN. Listen to this call that best describes what Yankee base running has looked like this year. Listen to this.
A bouncer. And Rizzo is going to be picked off. He's in the middle between second and third. Hedges now throws to second. On the way to third, back to second, back to third, tagged out, end of inning. Boy, if that wasn't the Yankees, that's what they do, run the bases like drunks. Well, Glaber will lead off the next inning.
All right. Well, it's good to have John back, you know.
I just wish he wasn't right because he's so right. They've been. I just don't understand how a Major League Baseball team over the course of 162 games can be this bad running the bases and still be a team that potentially wins the World Series. And it comes down to a lack of accountability, and that falls on Aaron Boone.
Well, you know, you're not totally wrong, but how much does it really matter is the question. And that's, at the moment, it doesn't seem to matter that much. What mattered more, what did you think of the move? Because when it happened, I was like, wow, I was texting my buddy who's a huge Yankee fan when they walked Soto
to get
the Judge, right? And it actually kind of worked. And it was a ballsy move by Cleveland. And I thought, you know, it wasn't a terrible move, but maybe it woke the monster. I mean, it kind of worked out in that inning. He hit the sac fly. So, you know, it didn't hurt him too bad. But, you know, when you're the judge and they walk so to get to you, you got to think that maybe played a part in what we saw later in the game, Jason.
It's baseball ABC, though. It really is. It's your ABCs of baseball. You have a base open. Now you're creating the force at any base. And you're right now, today, you have a choice of who do you want to face, Juan Soto, who's hit the ball really well in this postseason, or pretty well in this postseason, or Aaron Judge, who hasn't been able to really drive the ball out of the ballpark. I actually don't have a problem with the move. I don't have an issue with it at all. I think it's the right move by Stephen Vogt in that spot.
I don't disagree with you, but I think it had an impact on what happened later. And as I said at the top, I think Judge is, you know, the Yankees, you know, this year have been much better on the road. So the fact that they won both games at home was, I think, a bonus. You know, so I think, and as you said, hitting that fastball that was 95 and rising, and he got enough, was able to get enough on it to get that out. You have Sterling's call on that, because even he was surprised. Look, oh, there's a fly ball to center field, and next thing you know, it's out.
John's lost a little off his fastball. I love the guy, but he's lost a little off his fastball. So sometimes you can't tell, you know, where the ball's going. Real quick, in 90 seconds, actually about a minute, Mets Dodgers tied at one game apiece. I think the Yankees would rather see the Mets, by the way, because I think the Dodgers are the better team if they play in a 7-game series and you can't afford those base running blunders. What have you made so far the first two games of that series?
Well, I disagree with that. I think the Yankees would actually rather play the Dodgers. And I agree, although I don't disagree with you, the Dodgers, if you look at all the stats, the on base percentage, the bullpen, et cetera, have a better team all around. But there's something about the Mets that scares me right now. Okay. And I like the Mets. I mean, I'm one of those New York fans that I don't root against the Mets. I root for the Yankees, but I like to see the Mets do well. I grew up 15 minutes from what was then Shea Stadium, of course, where the Jets played. We'll get into that later. But I think tonight the Mets actually have the slight edge at home. They've got a better pitcher going. Buehler struggled big time in his last, I think, 6 starts. So I think the Mets, and actually for the one of the first times in this head-to-head, Jason, I believe the Mets are even a slight favorite.
Oh, yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. Wouldn't surprise me. And by the way, they swept the Yankees in the season series. The Mets did. Keep that in mind.
But I think the Mets got a little karma right now. That's what I'm feeling.
We're going to come back, do some football, lots of trade activity next. Rolling along on this Wednesday edition of the show, I want to have a serious conversation about Travis Hunter in 10 minutes. This idea of a two-way player. And why are we even going through this exercise? I want to talk about that. We talked some baseball. Patrick McEnroe's hanging out with us. Now we'll talk some football. So what was your reaction when you woke up after the Jets got beat by the Bills on Monday night, and then Tuesday morning we wake up and Devontae Adams is a New York Jet? What was your reaction when you heard about it,
Jason? My reaction was similar to when I woke up and heard about a week ago that Saleh had been fired, which was not that surprised. You know, it was sort of like the writing was on the proverbial wall. And with Devontae Adams, you feel like, I mean, I'm actually surprised it didn't happen sooner. I guess that's just because the Raiders were just holding out to try to get a little bit more out of it. And miraculously, the hamstring of Adams seems to have healed quickly. He seems like all of a sudden, after missing the last, I guess, 3 games in Vegas, he's ready to go. And I saw a quote from him this morning as I was prepping to do this show for you, where he said something to the effect of, yeah, the Raiders staff really took great care of me in the last few weeks. Yeah, I'm sure they're feeling good about that now that he's out the door, 88 and out the gate. But no, I'm not surprised. And again, as I said after Saleh was fired, okay, I'm going to say it again because it's even clearer now than it's ever been. It's put up or shut up time for Aaron Rodgers, okay, because you've got everything you want around you now. You've got Lazard. Now you've got Adams. You got the other guy. Who's the other guy who was at the Packers? It's like the Green Bay Jets now all of a sudden. But the point is, you know, there was something going on with him and Saleh. He tried to deny it, but that's bull BS. And, okay, I mean, Aaron Rodgers is a Hall of Famer, Jason. We all know that. But he hasn't played like a Hall of Famer.
He has not.
Not even close. No. I mean, he's okay. He's been solid, but I don't think he's even had a game where he's thrown for 300 yards the entire season that he's been with the Jets. That, no. He used to do that in his sleep. So, did they look better against Buffalo on Monday night? Yes. I thought they looked considerably better. You know, the crispness on offense was better. It seemed like they had that Rodgers knew what he wanted to do, you know, more quickly than he had in the previous five games. But that being said, I mean, I know we could talk about the missed field goals and the interception. But I mean, they still only scored 20 points. I mean, let's not get carried away.
And seven of them were on a Hail Mary. I mean, so even that. And look, he's not Willie Mays dropping fly balls at, you know, Shea Stadium and in center field, end of career bad. But he has not looked like the Aaron Rodgers that I think the Jets were expecting him to be, that the fan base was expecting him to be. But I think it's more interesting to watch around the league right now as all these teams who kind of look around, and I know the Chiefs are undefeated, and I know the Vikings are undefeated, but I think teams are looking at this and saying, man, if we just get into the playoffs, anybody who makes the playoffs has a chance. And I don't think that's been the case in years past. So you have teams just shoving all their chips into the middle. Buffalo, which was supposed to be in a bit of a transitionary year, you know, they let Stephon Diggs go, they get rid of him, trade him away. They go and trade for Amari Cooper yesterday. And to me, that's the eye-opener. That's the eye-opener to me. When Buffalo's looking around and going, all right, we're 4-2. We lead the AFC East. The Jets have been hot garbage so far. We don't know what the Dolphins are going to be, when they're going to get back Tua, what Tua they're getting back, you know, to play the quarterback position. Why can't we win a Super Bowl? Why can't we be the team? They are very close in terms of being able to play with a team like the Kansas City Chiefs if they meet up in the playoffs. They certainly match them at the most important position on the field at quarterback. So they go and trade for a veteran in Amari Cooper, who, when motivated, key words here, when motivated, playing in Cleveland, not a lot of motivation when you're playing with Deshaun Watson, I think they feel like they're getting a guy who's going to give everything he has because he actually has a chance to win something with them. So you have all these teams pushing their chips to the middle, and the trade deadline is still a few weeks away in the NFL, and teams are starting to say, all right, we've got to make a move here.
Yeah, I know, 100% agree with that. And I think it's kind of interesting because it's starting to get in the NFL, Jason, a little bit like it is in baseball, right? If you get in the tournament, you know, there's more teams that can get in through the wild card. And, you know, especially in baseball, you get hot like the Mets. We talked about that earlier. Get hot, you can make the run. It didn't feel like it used to be like that in the NFL as much. But now I feel because of free agency, because, you know, there's so much money for all these, you know, mediocre-ish quarterbacks, for example, that it's kind of opened up these opportunities, which I think is actually good for the league, Jason. I think it's good because you're 100% right. I mean, look at even though the Ravens lost their first two games this year, I'm doing my picks, you know, on other stations, and I'm saying to myself, wait a second. The Ravens are one of the best teams in the league, and now you see them starting to get it rolling. And the Bills, I 100% agree with you. That's a way bigger move than the Jet move, okay? Because you got Josh Allen, who's in the prime of his career, who's basically reeled it in through the first 5-6 weeks of the season.
Yes,
you know, not throwing the ball that much, not great receivers. Of course, he's running the ball when he has to. You know, they got a decent running game. But now you bring in Cooper, and you got a guy who can be the number one receiver, right? So that makes the other guys even a little bit better. And I think that's a huge move for them. And I think especially, as you said, I mean, Kansas City, okay, they're undefeated, but it's not like they're dominating teams. They've been winning close games all over the place. And I don't think they're as good as they were in the past. That's not to say they can't still win at all, because I just don't think you have total dominance of teams the way you used to in the NFL. And the Vikings, I mean, I don't know how many times I've bet against them. hopeful they keep winning, but I don't see that happening. I just don't. But, you know, who knows? Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, well, people have looked at the last six quarters of Sam Darnold and saw some regression to the mean when it comes to the way that he's played. So some people are going to be watching here as they come off, you know, come off the bye here and see what they look like. And, you know, I still say the Chiefs are going to win it all. Until somebody shows me otherwise, because they can play up and they can play down to the levels of their competition. They know exactly where on the gas pedal they have to be every time they step out on the field. You know, and that's sort of what they were last year. They didn't play great during the regular season. Then they got to the playoffs. They flipped the switch, and they.
You know, as I talked about with Rodgers, yeah. And you see it a little bit with Josh Allen. But when you watch Mahomes, okay, and you watch the Chiefs,
yeah,
it's like he knows exactly what he's going to do.
Yep.
On each play, and it's like there's a Christmas, there's a definitive nature to the way they run that offense, yeah, that I don't think anybody else has that right now.
Travis Hunter. Let's have a serious conversation about him next. All right, segment three on the show. I was thinking about this yesterday, and I've been wanting to talk about this. Have sort of a nuanced conversation when it comes to Travis Hunter. He's doing amazing things at Colorado. Sure, certainly should be in the conversation when it comes to the Heisman. But I want to have a larger conversation about this two-way player who's doing great things in the receiving game, great things on the defensive side of the ball. Nick Ferguson is somebody I want to talk to about this as well, who's in Denver and has been around that Colorado program some and was a former NFL safety. But I want to get your thoughts, Patrick, as we watch. Patrick McEnroe is hanging out with us on the show today. I want to talk about sort of the feasibility and why we're even going through this exercise with Travis Hunter of having him play two positions during these, you know, high-tier college football games. Because on the next level, I don't know how feasible it is for him to do this. So why aren't you having him focus on one position at the collegiate level so that when he gets to the NFL, and inevitably it comes down to a team saying, hey, you're playing one side of the ball or the other. We see how hard it is for guys to stay healthy in the NFL, how violent this game is, how physically taxing this game is. And unless he wants to get run into the ground in his rookie contract and have nothing left when he's supposed to get his first big payday in the NFL, I don't understand why we're going through this exercise of having him play both sides of the ball. It's going to look great on a highlight reel. It's going to look good on a resume. But ultimately, at the NFL level, I just don't know why we're doing it.
Well, I think, first of all, I mean, I'm just going to speak now, Jason, as a fan, because you're probably 100% right. I think it's awesome. I mean, I think it's fun to watch a guy be able to do this. You know, Deion actually, you know, did, his coach did in multiple sports, and you have the Bo Jacksons, and, you know, but you're right. A two-way player in the NFL is basically unheard of. Now, we're talking about this kid more because of this. So potentially he's doing it. Maybe Coach Prime is encouraging him to do it because, you know, he likes to get attention, so on and so forth. And he's obviously very good at both positions. But with all the different schemes that they have in the NFL, right? They have specialists that come in, the guys that come in just on third down, whether they're linebackers or whether they're D-backs, whatever they are, that don't play every down. I mean, there's a lot more players that do that now, specialization. It's like we're seeing in baseball with, you know, the bullpen does the entire game, right? So they sort of do that a little bit more now, it feels like to me, you know better than I do, in the NFL. So if I'm this kid, or maybe more importantly to your point, you're an NFL team, you're thinking, you know, I could use this guy in different situations. So in other words, he's not going to, if he played every down, of course, that's pretty much impossible. Or you're going to get hurt, and, you know, that's just not feasible. But if you're going to pick your spots, I mean, is he a first down? Is he a receiver that comes in when it's third and long or, you know, second and short. I don't know enough about it to understand that.
Yeah, maybe but you cap him. Maybe you cap him at X number of plays per game and figure out how to divvy that up between offense and defense. That actually what you're saying does make a lot of sense when you think of it that way.
So from his perspective, as a really good college football player, does it make more? We're talking about him on your show. He's getting more attention. I guess the NFL scouts don't really care too much about who's popular. They're going to look at what's his 40, how much can he jump, what's his attitude, all those kind of things that they do when they're drafting players. But that being said, it sounds like this guy's good enough to play either side of the ball at the next level. And if he can do that, then I think it's worth his time and I think it's worth Coach Prime's time to, give this guy an opportunity to do both, because I think, it's a hell of a lot of fun to watch it.
Yeah. It certainly is. I actually, and I said this to somebody who covers the NFL the other day, I am suspicious as to whether or not he even finishes this season, because if that team is 5-4 late in the year, 4-5, or 5-5. I wonder if he says, I'm not gonna get myself hurt, going into an NFL draft and that cycle. I'm not gonna win the Heisman anyway. It wouldn't surprise me if he decided, I'm just gonna. And you're seeing more guys do this, whether it's not playing in bowl games, unless it's a championship game or something like that. Wouldn't surprise me if he did that. It brings me, though, even in talking about Shohei Ohtani and how great this guy is pitching, and he can pitch and he can hit. Oh, he's the modern day Babe Ruth. All of that is great. If I'm the Dodgers, and I know they can't have this conversation with him because he won't hear it. He doesn't want to listen to it. I just say, the heck with the pitching stuff. Let's have you in the field for 140 games a year. Instead of just being a DH, let's capitalize on that, because he keeps blowing out his elbow every time he goes and pitches. If I'm the Dodgers, and look, I know, from a ticket-selling perspective, the guy that can pitch and the guy can hit, I'd rather just have him doing one thing.
Yeah, well, I think you're right about that, but I think you hit the nail on the head. Ohtani wants to be Ohtani. And so, as we're seeing, you got to listen to a guy. By the way, what position would he play in the field?
Yeah, he'd be a right fielder.
Right fielder.
Yeah, he'd be a right fielder. And he's fast enough to play center if he wants. But here's the other thing about it, too, with Ohtani, and it's this. You think he's going 50-50 if he's pitching every fifth day? No. He's not.
Probably not.
He's not going to be as – I think you're taking some away to get a guy that might be able to make 25 starts. Just doesn't make sense to me from an organizational standpoint.
Back to the football thing. I think you're spot on when it comes to the players, and God bless these college players for saying, we're not going to play in a bowl game because we're not getting paid enough, or now they're getting paid, and some in the big schools, obviously. But another conversation we got to have at some point, Jason, is this whole NIL thing and where it's going. It doesn't seem to be hurting college football. It seems actually in some ways, with all the, Ohio State now playing USC, they're in the same league. It's crazy, right? Look, I got my Cardinals in, not that anyone cares about Stanford in football, nice. In the ACC, it's bizarre. But it seems like, college football is bigger and better than ever. People love it. Texas, Georgia this weekend. Another huge game, Georgia, Alabama. So it seems like it's working out well, but where's it going?
How much of that NIL money is going to tennis, by the way?
You'd be surprised.
Really?
A little bit. There's some. It's not like football and basketball, but
you could educate
certain
places
the guys are making some money, and I say more power to them.
All right, you could educate me. We'll finish it out with odds and ends. I got to pick Patrick's brain on a little bit of tennis before we go. Stick around. Sure. Lots more to do. We continue on this Wednesday edition of Sports Wrap. Patrick McEnroe will rejoin us a little later on. But now we talk to this guy. He's the great David Ardsma, former MLB reliever.
I'm no Patrick McEnroe, but
I do my best. Stop it. cut it out. Talk to you about some baseball. Talked about it a little bit at the start of the show as well. Tell me about Luke Weaver. Help me understand how, you know, this guy that's basically been a journeyman.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure to some degree as a guy who's been a middle reliever, you know, came in wanting to be a starter, all this. You could probably appreciate a lot of what his career entails. How does this happen? How does this guy become this, I don't want to say all-world closer, but a guy who finds himself in the closer role for the Yankees in the middle of a World Series run potentially?
Well, especially since his entire career basically was St. Louis, Arizona, and then like a whole bunch of other teams. He was a starter, right? So he's sitting there, he's a starter. He made 25 starts last year, which is amazing. Now he's gone from complete starter to ultimate reliever, just 62 games out of the bullpen. What that shows me is that he's got good stuff. He's got good enough stuff to get in the big leagues. There was probably something stopping him from being great. And what it was role. And that means that it allowed the stuff to play in the correct role. And I can't imagine, I mean, so some of these years were not the greatest years ever. I can't imagine that these teams didn't try it out earlier, where he had one year where he had some relief stuff, but you usually don't go back to the big leagues as a starter. And he did. The Yankees figured something out this year with him in that bullpen. He figured something out. I guarantee you he was probably using his pitches a little bit different, getting comfortable in a role, in a situation. A lot of times it's just you just never have a job and you're always fighting. And sometimes it's somebody just patting you on the back saying, "We trust you." And then you end up with the right situation, the right guys get hurt, and you're a closer in the playoffs, apparently.
But he's a 3 or 4 pitch guy. Does that work as a closer, or will they try to, you know, if it goes beyond this playoff run, or maybe they're just focused on this playoff run, would you rather your closer only be a guy that's great with a couple of pitches as opposed to, well, I could throw 3 or 4 different ones?
Sometimes it's helpful. And again, remember, every closer, every reliever was a starter until we sucked. And Luke sucked for a little bit. So then he became a reliever. So the advantage, though, of him pitching for so many years and being 31, he knows how to pitch. He has 4 pitches that at times and days are good, where a lot of guys will throw 2 good ones and then a couple bad ones. He has 4 good ones, and if one's not working, he's got another one he can go to. That's the advantage of being able to do that, and what he is able to step back and say, okay, I've got the 4 pitches. The only problem is when you take a starter mentality and try to put it in the bullpen. We're going to set guys up and do this and maybe see them next to bat. It's like, no. You get 3 pitches. Let's strike them out. Like, that's it. Like, keep it to 3 where you're not setting anybody up. There's no pitch here to set the, no. Get it out as fast as you can in the bullpen. And it seems like to have that mindset.
How do you reset here if you're the Guardians dropping the first 2 the way they have here in New York? You know, that's a team that relies on its defense, bat to ball, putting a lot of balls in play. Defense has been a little shoddy at times for a team that's supposed to be so good defensively. I mean, how do you kind of push the reset button here with the day off going back to Cleveland?
If I'm Stephen Voigt and I'm the manager of the Guardians, what I'm telling them is, let's look at these 2 games. We did not get beat. We beat ourselves both of these games. The first game, you know, you had Soto home run, you had a Giancarlo Stanton home run, and that's really it. And then you had a couple problems here and there defensively. This game was all defense. That's what I saw. It was all defense. And they had Gerrit Cole a couple times. They had runners on base where they could have caused some real damage. And he left some balls over the plate, especially the one to Naylor right over the plate that could have been super bad, like bad damage. So they were getting away with some pitches. So what I would tell the team, step back. Let's get back to our center. Let's get back to like our number one spot. Where do we all start out? Where's all of ours?
Let like, the majors
base. And just start there. Put a little smile on your face and say, play some baseball. Go back to Guardian baseball. I think their buttholes are probably a little tight right now. They're making mistakes they'd probably never made all year long. But you got to stop playing tight and just relax and just go back to, again, those couple of basics. And if we hit those things, we're going to be good.
Did not have balls being tight on my scorecard for today's show, but now I do. The Yankees base running. You know, look, I mean, you can get away with this stuff during the regular season.
Can you? I mean,
No, but I mean, obviously they could. They were the worst base running team in baseball during the regular season, according to Baseball Savant. So, yes, apparently you can get away with it during 162-game regular season. You cannot in the playoffs. You might even be able to get away with it against the Guardians because the Guardians can't score any runs. If they play the Dodgers in the World Series, they cannot do this. And this is who they are.
If the Guardians didn't make the defensive mistakes that they have made, they can't be getting away with it either. There was even a spot that I didn't even see anybody criticize was in game one. Stanton hit a foul ball that the right fielder dove and slid and caught. Yes. I think it was in the first inning. Mm-hmm. They didn't tag up. The guy's sliding into the wall, basically, in the corner of right field of Yankee Stadium, and nobody's tagging up. Those are the things. I would have been losing my mind if I'm a coach on that bench. And that's the thing about it is I don't see them losing their mind. I don't see them holding him accountable. I don't see Rizzo. Nope. What was that? Chaz. I mean, what is Chisholm doing out there?
Chisholm,
the point that they brought him on was to be able to running and you're doing that in the playoffs. That's brutal.
And you know what the worst part is? They're going to win a World Series. Boone's going to be a manager for another 5 or 6 years. And the Yankee fans are going to have to watch this kind of base running and lack of accountability for at least another handful of years. David Ards was hanging out with us. We'll get to him on Mets Dodgers. Also, interesting situation involving the Tampa Bay Rays in their home next. Instead of something to consider today, we will consider some more baseball with our friend David Ardsma.
That's the best.
Former big league reliever. Kind enough to join us on Sports Wrap. Talked about the Yankees. All right, let's get into the Mets. They couldn't have looked worse in game one in Los Angeles against the Dodgers. And then in typical Mets fashion, they're back to being the Mets and those comeback kids and this great story that Sam Yarnell goes nuts when I talk about them being like this great story because their payroll is so high. How could they be a great story? Blah, 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 blah.
Still be a great story.
He's so angry.
There's a lot. There's a young man.
He's a young
to the Mets.
Yeah, he's a very angry young man. You know, it's kids today. What can you do? So Francisco Lindor does his thing. Mark Vientos does his. They get the series back to New York tied at one game apiece. I mean, look, I still say on paper the Dodgers should win this series. But the Mets are just a wild card right now with the way they've played since July and this sort of never-say-die mentality they have. What's your takeaway from the first two games of this series?
It's the hardest thing to try to figure out what's going on with this series, right? What I'm still at a loss is that we're game two of the National League Championship Series and we're throwing a bullpen game.
I just said this yesterday on the show. I said, how could you have, how is this possible?
This isn't the Guardians. You know, we're not Detroit with Scooble and then just throw whatever against the wall and figure it out. You're the Los Angeles Dodgers. I get this. When your IL is one of the best pitching staffs in baseball, that's a problem. And then that's a reality that the Dodgers are facing that no one else is. Like in all reality, their top five guys on the IL are all all-stars, and they got some Cy Young winners in there. So that's a reality that they're facing, but they got to get through. The problem is these guys are going to come up again, and the Mets are going to do the same thing again. Luckily, Kodai Senga sucked, and that gave the Dodgers a huge boost, and that's how they jumped out on top. But if Senga has a great game, and Flaherty isn't amazing and perfect, this series it might be 2-0 Mets really quickly, and that's a problem I'm seeing. And then what you're also, and we're going to talk about it, and we have to talk about it, is Ohtani. Ohtani has been struggling so bad. Luckily, he has been about amazing and perfect when runners are on base. So when runners are in scoring position, he's perfect. But outside of that, he's supposed to be the guy getting on base, causing trouble, causing havoc, and he hasn't figured that out yet. It's just, when is that going to happen? Because you know he's too good of a player. But when I'm watching the Mets, Shamania, that was absolutely amazing. And he was carving Ohtani up. He was carving all those lefties up and did an incredible job. You got to give him credit for what he did. No matter how bad the Dodgers play, you have to give him credit where, God, Ohtani just looked uncomfortable.
Yeah, he did. And it just goes to show you how human even these Superman-type players are with an Ohtani. And even Aaron Judge, up until last night, he was starting to put together better at-bats, and you could see the signs were there that he could potentially come out of it. And he's certainly trying to still stay within the strike zone, and he's not expanding the zone. But Ohtani, it's definitely disconcerting because they're not – look, they can get to a World Series without Ohtani. They cannot win a World Series without Ohtani right now.
I don't think so. No. I'm in your boat. I don't think they can win it without him. Again, he's your leadoff hitter. He's the best hitter in baseball with Judge, and we're going right here.
Sure.
But again, he's a 53-53 guy. Like, he has to be able to get on base and just cause something. Like, just walk, get hit by the ball, stay a little in there, get close to the plate. Do something to get on base and then wreak some havoc for Betts, Freeman, and let those guys do their thing.
You're welcome in my boat anytime, by the way. Tropicana Field is a mess. The roof gets torn off. They're supposed to be moving into a new ballpark in 3 years. It's going to cost too much to replace the roof. So now there's talk they may not have a home for 3 years. So you've got the A's playing in Sacramento in a minor league ballpark. You'll probably have the same with the Rays next year. There are some people floating the idea of, hey, and nothing's concrete on this, but hey, why not have them play in Oakland for the next 3 years? I think that's a nightmare because, one, I mean, I don't know who would go, but two, from, you know, an AL East team playing out on the West Coast, I think that causes all sorts of problems. What do you do if you're baseball with the Rays? Do you try them out in different places to see how they draw as potential, sort of signals to other cities that may want a Major League Baseball team? What do you do, David Ardsma?
I think that's probably the best idea there is. So when you're already sitting here and considering there's a group of people in Salt Lake City trying to get a team.
Yep.
Group of people in Nashville trying to get a team. People in Montreal get a team. Those are the big spots. But Major League Baseball has also, you know, gone to Puerto Rico, down to Mexico City, and these other places. If it's me, Major League Baseball, one thing that was super considered was going to Montreal already, doing a split schedule with Montreal. I give Montreal a real legit shot here to have a team. Then I immediately talk about Nashville. I'm not moving out to Salt Lake City. I'm not going to Oakland. Let those teams be West. Let those be what they are. But I might even consider Mexico City if I have time. The easy option, super easy option, is just move them to Yankees minor league stadium. You move them to their own minor league ballpark already right
San
there
Juan?
In the area.
San
the
Juan, Yankees Puerto Rico?
Puerto Rico I love it. We already did it once. That's the only problem. We did it once and it wasn't super successful. And that's the only issue. The thing that hasn't been considered too is the Blue Jays have a brand new basically facility just up the road too. I mean, you don't even have to pack your bags. It's a 30-minute drive.
I like the idea of Montreal.
I love it.
It's a major league sized facility. You could spruce it up, make it look pretty. I like the idea of Montreal. If not Hartford, the Yard Goat Stadium.
There you go.
Dunkin' Donuts Park. David Ardsma, always appreciate it, my man.
Oh, thank you.
We're coming back. Odds and Ends next. All right, just about time to put the wraps on this baby for a Wednesday. Before we do, a reminder, check out the Sports Wrap with Jason Page podcast. It's available on all of your favorite podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Odyssey, Prime, Amazon, whatever. All of them. Go and check that out today. Without any further delay, it's time for some odds and ends. Odds and ends, Patrick McEnroe, which feels weird to say. Odds and ends, Patrick McEnroe. Some tennis. Because I said, if I'm going to have Patrick McEnroe on, we got to talk a little bit of tennis. I wanted to get you on last week when Rafa Nadal announced his plans to retire at the end of the season. You couldn't have been surprised, right?
No, I was not surprised. Obviously, it's been a huge topic over the last really 2 years. How much longer is he going to play? And I've told everybody, and I think it's turned out to be correct, that he wants to play. He wants to give himself another chance to win a major, to be a factor in a major. And he's not going to keep playing if he doesn't think he can be a factor. In other words, he's not going to go down to the Australian Open and, you know, just say, I just want to win one or two matches. He's going to go down there or go to the French Open one more time thinking I could actually win this thing. And I think he finally realized, saw the writing on the wall as he tried to play throughout different times this year, Jason, that his body just wasn't going to allow him to really have a chance, a realistic chance to do that. He had some decent matches this year. I mean, he played Zverev in the first round at the French this year, and it was a tight three-set match. The guy ends up getting to the final. So if he had had a different draw, I think he could have been a factor at the French Open. But I think he realized that it just wasn't going to happen. I'm glad that he's going to play his final match in a Davis Cup match in Spain, in his home country. You know, I first saw Rafael Nadal in a competitive match, Jason, as the captain I was of the United States Davis Cup team back in, it was 2004.
Wow.
Okay. We were playing in the final in Seville, United States against Spain. Spain had Ferrero, Moya. They were loaded. Then they had this young 18-year-old named Rafael Nadal. We saw, yeah, we heard a little bit about him. They put him in at the last minute, decided to put him in the singles over, I think it was Ferrero, who's now, of course, the coach of Alcaraz, and he had won the French Open, Ferrero. And he was pissed. And, of course, the rest is history. Nadal never lost a match on clay, Jason, in Davis Cup in his entire career. And, of course, he only lost four matches ever in, you know, 16 years or whatever he played at the French Open. So one of the most remarkable players, obviously the greatest clay court player by far of all time. But through all that, he was a humble, great sportsman that never made excuses, that obviously gave 110%, but did it with so much class. And, you know, he never forgot who he was and his roots. And one of the most likable players I've ever been lucky enough to know, who was an all-time great. Just a class act all around. So tennis will miss him in a big way.
What do you see his role being post playing career? Do you, you know, some of these guys wind up becoming coaches. What do you see his role post playing career being?
Hanging out on his yacht in Mallorca. He'll be doing that. I think he'll, you know, it's like Federer's been busier than ever with his sponsor responsibilities. You know, Federer loves the sport. He loves tennis. I think Rafa loves it too. Not quite as much as Roger, who just loves to be around the scene. But I think you'll see Nadal be pretty active. He's got his big tennis academy in Spain, in Mallorca, which is very successful. A lot of kids that train at our academy, the McEnroe, John McEnroe Academy in New York, go to Rafa's academy in the summer. They come back with the Rafa stuff. So he's done an awesome job marketing that, and he's involved in that. His uncle Tony's involved there as well. Carlos Moya, his longtime coach. So I think he'll be busy with that. And I think you'll see him around at some majors, but he's got, you know, huge sponsorship deals. So he's still gonna be very active. And I think, but not quite as much as Mr. Federer.
What are you watching for in tennis over the next couple months leading into the Australian Open?
You know, this is an interest. I mean, Sinner's got number one wrapped up. He just won in Shanghai, which is a big Masters event, beat Djokovic in the final. Djokovic is really, I think, looking to just win that one more big one if he can. And Australia has been his best over the years. He's won it 10 times. So you're kind of looking to see where he is. Does he play one more tournament? You know, he usually plays the ATP finals, but maybe he won't this year. And then you look for some of the younger Americans. You know, Taylor Fritz is going to be in the final eight. He's had a great year. Alcaraz is going to be right there. He's still, you know, the most electric player in the game. Can anyone compete with those two guys, Sinner and Alcaraz, on the men's side moving forward? The women, you've got Sabalenka, you've got Coco Gauff, who's now got a new coach. She got rid of Brad Gilbert. And, you know, she won a big tournament in China as well. So did Sabalenka. So I think it's pretty much the same storylines going into Australia, the first major of next year. And, of course, I'll be there with ESPN as always.
I've got about 25 seconds here. How much longer do you think Djokovic plays?
One more year.
Okay.
I think, yeah, because I think he didn't win a major this year. It was, you know, he played pretty well, won the Olympics, which was his big goal. I think if he doesn't win a major next year, I think he hangs it up. But I think he's got a shot. I mean, as I said, he's going to be the third favorite now behind Sinner and Alcaraz. Can he win a major? Yes, but I think it's going to... I said, by the way, at your tournament, Indian Wells, I know you now live in Vegas,
yeah,
that he wouldn't win a major this year, and he didn't. So I'm not sure about next year, but I'll think about it, and I'll get back to you.
Patrick McEnroe, this was fun. I'm glad we got to do it. Let's do it again soon, all right?
Sounds good, my man. Thanks for having me.
It's going to wrap it up for us. Thank you to David Ardsma. Thanks to you for watching. I'm Jason Page. We'll see you back here on Thursday for more Sports Wrap.